Welcome to This Week in Palestine, a weekly half-hour segment of news from Palestine and discussion of issues relevant to the Palestinian struggle for freedom from Israel's brutal military occupation and colonization of their homeland. This program presents news and analysis from the Palestinian perspective, a perspective we do not get from the mainstream media. We ask our listeners, were you involved last week in the Palestine-Israel peace movement and the Palestinian struggle for freedom from Israel's illegal military occupation and colonization of their homeland? Did you speak out on the atrocities Israel is committing every day in Gaza and the West Bank? If not, why not? There are many ways to get involved. Here are 11 examples. One, you could join the Boston Coalition for Palestinian Rights by calling 617-491-2313. Two, you could join the Middle East Crisis Coalition by writing to crisismiddleeast@yahoo.com. Three, you could join the Israel-Palestine Task Force of United for Justice with Peace by writing to UJPIPTaskForce@yahoo.com. Four, if you are Jewish and prefer to join a Jewish group, there is the Boston chapter of Jewish Voice for Peace, which you can contact either by calling 617-984-0532 or by visiting its website at www.vopj.org. Five, you could go to Palestine and help with the olive harvest or help Palestinians live their daily lives under occupation by contacting the group Boston to Palestine at its website, bostontopalestine.org. Six, you could work with the International Women's Peace Service in Palestine by applying to iwps-pal.org. Seven, you could go to Palestine under the Birthright Unplugged program, or eight, under the Needle in the Groove program by applying respectively at birthrightunplugged.org and needleinthegroove.org. Nine, you could go to Palestine and see what life is really like in a Palestinian refugee camp by going to the Aida refugee camp and participating in its sixth international work camp from August 2nd to August 16. Applications can be obtained by writing to helenp149@yahoo.com. 10. You could join Bethlehem Siraj Center's Palestinian Summer Celebration 2007 program. To register for the program or get more information, please visit the website sirajcenter.org/courses.htm. And 11, if you live in Cambridge, you can join a delegation of Cambridge residents who are planning to go to Bethlehem in August. Bethlehem is being strangled by Israel's illegal wall. It is completely isolated and is desperate for help to reopen the city once again to the outside world. For more information or to join the delegation, please write to bethlehemcambridge@gmail.com. You know, it is said that of the instruments of oppression, the deadliest are silence and apathy. Speaking of the oppression of African Americans in the United States, Dr. Martin Luther King said, quote, "History will have to record that the greatest tragedy of this period was not the strident clamor of the bad people, but the appalling silence of the good people." Unquote. Nobel laureate Elie Wiesel once said during an interview that what made the Jewish Holocaust possible was not hatred, but apathy. The late Israeli historian Tanya Reinhardt once described the situation in Palestine as creeping genocide, and former Israeli Knesset member Shulamit Aloni described it as the murder of a population under cover of righteousness. We can end this oppression, but we must stand up and be counted. Palestine was never in greater need of our help, so please get involved. It is Sunday, July 22nd, 2007. Here are the news highlights for the week. The leading item in international news this week was President Bush's announcement on Monday that he was launching an initiative to bolster Palestinian President Abbas. Mr. Bush called for a regional peace conference this fall. He peppered his comments with an exhortation to Arab leaders to show leadership, conveniently ignoring the fact that the Arab countries have three times proposed a comprehensive peace agreement since 2002, agreements which Israel rejected, adding that the Arab countries wishing peace would find the United States very generous in its support. He renewed his pledge of $80 million to train Mr. Abbas's presidential guards to fight Hamas, and administration officials said more aid would come after former UK Prime Minister Tony Blair reports success in building a plan to bolster Palestinian security and political institutions. Mr. Blair is authorized only to impose reforms on the Palestinian people and expressly forbidden to engage in peacemaking negotiations or attempting to end Israel's attacks against Gaza and the West Bank. We recall in this context our earlier report on May 13th, in which we cited an article published in the Jewish daily newspaper, The Forward, which quoted a White House official as having said that, quote, a lot of what is done during Secretary Rice's frequent trips to the region is just process. Steps needed in order to keep the Europeans and moderate Arab countries on the team and to make sure they feel that the United States is promoting peace in the Middle East, unquote, while in effect it is not. The New York Times report on Bush's initiative claimed that Bush was signaling that his administration would use its remaining months to make a major push for peace between Israelis and Palestinians. The Times further alleged that the planned meeting was first of its kind in Mr. Bush's presidency, and it signaled a pivotal shift. So we were asked to believe on Tuesday morning that this conference is some kind of major breakthrough. But White House spokesman Tony Snow quickly disabused us of this notion during a press briefing at the White House at noon the same day. He said, and I quote, I think a lot of people are inclined to try to treat this as a big peace conference. It's not. This is a meeting to sit down and try to find ways of building fundamental and critical institutions for the Palestinians that are going to enable them to have self-government and democracy. End of quote. So, more of the same empty political gestures to delay discussing substantive issues and give Israel more time to demolish Palestinian homes and build more settlements with the blessing, support, and funding from the United States. And we, American taxpayers, are paying for the continued oppression and dispossession of the Palestinian people. We recall in that context what former Israeli Prime Minister Yitzhak Shamir once said when he was asked for advice on how to conduct negotiations with the Palestinians. He said, delay them for 10 years and then delay them for another 10 years. Israel wasted no time on the ground in its continuing campaign to erase the memory of pre-1948 Palestinian presence. It is now planning to demolish 500 Palestinian houses in the Ajami neighborhood in the city of Jaffa, home to 3,000 Palestinians with Israeli citizenship, to build parks and apartments for Jews only. And Israeli settlers from the illegal West Bank settlement of Otniel, located southwest of El Khalil, or Hebron as it is known in this country, have been observed cutting down trees belonging to the Palestinian West Bank village of Rabud. This step is usually followed by setting up settler tents, prohibiting Palestinian citizens from reaching their lands, and finally taking control of the land with the help of Israeli soldiers, using a plethora of fake deeds and purchase claims. Regarding political news from the ground, last week, Palestinian Prime Minister Salam Fayyad resigned as head of the emergency government and was immediately appointed on Saturday, July 14th, to lead an interim cabinet after the emergency period had expired. On Monday, July 16th, Mr. Olmert and Mr. Abbas met in Jerusalem and agreed to form two committees. One committee will attempt to restore relations between Israelis and Palestinians to their state before December 28, 2000, that's to say, before the start of the second uprising against the occupation. The second committee will discuss the issue of the Palestinian resistance fighters who were deported by Israel in 2002 after the Israeli army invaded the southern West Bank city of Bethlehem and besieged more than 60 Palestinian fighters in the Church of the Nativity. Later on that day, at a press conference in Ramallah, Dr. Sa'eb Arakat, head of the Palestinian Negotiation Department, said that Mr. Abbas's focus during his meeting with Mr. Olmert was the creation of the Palestinian state with Jerusalem as the capital, through the implementation of the US-backed roadmap and the 2002 Arab Peace Initiative. Dr. Arafat added that Mr. Abbas rejected the list Mr. Olmert had submitted to his cabinet of 250 Palestinian prisoners he proposed to release, demanding that Israel release all the political leaders, ministers, and parliament members it has kidnapped over the past 2 years. The list, drawn unilaterally by Mr. Olmert, was in contravention of an agreement reached at the 2005 Sharm el-Sheikh summit, which stipulated that prisoner lists are to be compiled by a joint Israeli-Palestinian committee created at the summit. Among the list of prisoners approved by the Israeli cabinet on Tuesday were 11 minors and one or two elderly prisoners who spent 15 years in jail. The prisoner release was scheduled for Friday, July 20th. The number of prisoners held by Israel has now swelled to 12,000, many of whom have not been charged with any offense and are, in fact, victims of state kidnapping. Also on Tuesday, the Israeli newspaper Haaretz revealed that President Abbas had confidentially urged both Israel and Egypt to keep the Rafah border crossing into Egypt closed. In other news from the ground, Sana' Sanan, a young 27-year-old Palestinian woman, died on the Egyptian side of the border with Gaza on Wednesday, after having been stranded at the border crossing for 35 days, unable to return to her home in Gaza because of the closure of the Rafah crossing. Ms. Sanan had gone to Egypt for medical treatment of a cancer. Her condition worsened during the night as she waited to traverse the closed crossing into Gaza. Her death brought to 30 the number of Palestinians who have died in the last 40 days because of the Rafah closure. Also on Wednesday, the United Nations warned that Gaza's already weak economy could collapse unless the main commercial crossing between Gaza and Israel is reopened. The Karni crossing has been closed since June 12th. On Friday, Israel released 256 Palestinian prisoners, including the 6 women and 11 minors. Buses took the prisoners from the Ketziot prison in southern Israel to the West Bank town of Ramallah, where they were greeted by their families and thousands of well-wishers in highly emotional celebrations of their release from captivity. Our topic today is conflict resolution and peacemaking. It is no exaggeration to say that there is probably no person in the world better qualified to speak to these issues than Boston College Professor of Theology, Father Ray Helmick, who has made peacemaking his life's mission. For more than 20 years, Father Helmick has been in contact with Israeli governments and various United States administrations while he visited Palestine, maintained correspondence and spoken at length with the late PLO chairman Yasser Arafat and the Fatah leadership, and more recently with the Hamas leadership, including the late Sheikh Yassin and Khalid Mash'al, chairman of Hamas's political bureau in Damascus. Today, it is our distinct honor to have Father Ray Helmick with us at the studio. Good morning, Father Ray Helmick.
Well, good morning, Sharif. It's very good to be here with you.
Welcome to This Week in Palestine. There's so much to talk about, and where to begin. Perhaps you could share with us your own personal views of the situation in Palestine today and the role of United States policy.
I suppose there has never been a more dismal-looking period in Palestinian history than right now. The division of Palestinians between Hamas and Fatah, the geographical division now, West Bank and Gaza. This is such a dangerous thing. I find that the American policy is very largely responsible for sponsoring that division, and that particularly as the United States has tried to fund a military buildup on the part of Fatah over all of this time since the election of January 2006, when the Hamas people won the election. It has really been trying to foster a civil war among Palestinians, and that's very pernicious thing, a very dangerous thing. Dangerous also to Israel. Israel to me is a very precious state. I am very concerned always for its safety, for its welfare, the good of its people. I'm always very conscious, even as you read your initial reporting of news, you had so many Israelis to refer to who were really very much on side for the two states, for justice for the Palestinians, for a way for the Israelis and the Palestinians to live in peace with each other. You have right now an Israeli government that is extremely weak. Even when it came to the issue, the Hamas people looking for a prisoner exchange for the one prisoner that they took a year ago in June, young Gilad Shalit, and some number of the Palestinian prisoners. I actually wrote to Khaled Mashal advising that I thought right now the Israeli government is too weak to accomplish that, that an Israeli government would actually fall if it came through with a serious prisoner release, this release of the 255 Fatah people. Really was not a serious prisoner release. It was a great relief for those 250-odd families and for those men. But it doesn't touch the real issue of prisoners. There's something to be observed about Palestinian prisoners. Some of them are there in prison for having done desperate things, things that we really have to repudiate, some of the suicide bombing, things of this sort. And yet there is one common thread for every Palestinian prisoner. Every Palestinian there is in prison for resistance in one way or another to an illegal occupation. That's the most fundamental thing to be observed about them. I recommended, actually, in writing to Mashal, that there would be more profit for Hamas and for the Palestinians in releasing young Shalit unconditionally, that this would be an act of compassion. I'm really very struck by the family, and particularly the father of Shalit, who has been really heroic in the kind of pleas he has made for justice for the Palestinians and for the release of his son. The ways that he has gone to just about the only international resource that is talking to Hamas, to the Norwegians, to make contact and make really respectful contact. And this is most essential. The thing that is most lacking between Israelis and Palestinians right now is really respectful discourse. The Israelis have treated Mahmoud Abbas very contemptuously. They plead now, and George Bush pleads, that he is doing everything to boost the reputation and the standing with his own people of Mahmoud Abbas. And yet what they give him is practically nothing. These 255 prisoners are really a contemptuous disregard of the real problem of Palestinian prisoners. There are so many women, there are so many children who are prisoners among those, whatever the number is, you hear 10,000, you hear higher figures, whatever the number of those prisoners are. This is outrageous that these people should be prisoners. The number of prisoners, well, as I say, it is simply a contemptuous response to yield up these 255, very politically chosen, only people who have succumbed to the temptations that are being offered. There's nothing more necessary right now for the Palestinians than to restore unity among them and to be together in the only thing that Palestinians can be doing properly, which is resistance to the occupation. The only kind of resistance that is going to be of any use to them is a nonviolent resistance. It's really imperative. You know, the resistance that was maintained through the Second World War was something that people now admire, that everyone outside of the orbit of the conquests of the Second World War admired even at the time. It didn't free people from the occupation. What freed them was that eventually the Allied armies came and liberated them. There aren't any armies coming. There are no armies coming to rescue the Palestinians. It's not even what the Palestinians are looking for. The Palestinians came to a consensus. It was very clear at the time of the Oslo Accord. It had already been very clear at the time of the 1988 PNC that what they were looking for was peace with an Israeli state and a state of their own. Now, something very essential has changed. Palestine is no longer a single-party entity. It was that. There are a number of distinct political parties within the PLO, but effectively the PLO was, as it was called at Rabat in 1974 by the Arab League, the sole legitimate representative of the Palestinian people. When, in 1993, the Israelis came with the Palestinians to the Oslo Accord, what the Israelis did was to adopt the Rabat formula of 1974 and recognize the PLO as the sole legitimate representative of the Palestinian people. It was the single responsible party. The Palestine Authority was a dimension of the PLO. Now, Hamas is a distinct party, and this, in fact, is a democratic gain for the Palestinians, that they are now a dual party or a multi-party system. There are some smaller parties, but effectively it is between Hamas and Fatah. They really need to work together for the good of the Palestinian people. They really need not to yield to plans for the further colonization, the further creation of territory. They need to be in active resistance to that. Fatah needs to be as much as Hamas does. And they can only do it together. And if they were, in fact, to have a properly mobilized, nonviolent resistance to all the aspects of occupation and colonization, there's no way to do it except together. It's terribly necessary that they come to this. And they have to reckon that the United States is in flagrant opposition to this fundamental interest of the Palestinians. It shouldn't be. I think any of us need to be looking for an American policy that is supportive of Israel, its safety, its prosperity, and equally of the interests, the freedom, the prosperity of the Palestinian people.
It is, I think, worthy to note that Hamas is not a member of the PLO.
Right.
And that Mr. Abbas is appealing to the PLO for their agreement to suspend the government and hold new elections. So, in a sense, he's using the PLO to to take away any recognition of Hamas leadership, which is unfortunate. And another thing is that I think you've touched upon a very important thing, which is that Fatah, there are some factions of Fatah who have been involved, that have been involved in resistance to the occupation. But the resistance to the occupation has been criminalized over the years. And if one looks at the cemetery of peace efforts, one finds many common threads, one of which is the so-called security agreements, which basically have made the occupied responsible for the safety of the occupier. And so we find so many contradictions there of whether Fatah will agree to work with Hamas to resist the occupation non-violently. Another factor that needs to be considered also is the fact that there has been a history of non-violent resistance. All the non-violent demonstrations against the wall, for example, where the Israeli army and border police instigate the violence themselves and do not admit foreign press or media there, so the world does not see the non-violent resistance to the occupation. And it seems as if the world, what the Palestinians have sought is to at least get recognition of their plight, and all they are getting is seemingly encouragement from the world community to continue that oppression. What can be done about this? It's a losing situation for them.
Well, you know, the world press very often has been right there at nonviolent actions by Palestinians, and they don't report them.
Yes.
I know some instances that are simply very funny when you have all of the television networks, all kinds of reporters, witness something that simply they never carry. The Palestinians can really gain the high ground. And they have to reckon always that any action of violence on their part is going to be reported as crime. That's simply the way it is. Any action of violence by the Israelis is going to be reported as self-defense. That is simply the way things are reported. The only way that the Palestinians are going to gain the high ground is by a respectful treatment. They have to reckon that every nonviolent action they mount is going to be resisted violently by the Israeli army. If they maintain a Gandhian, even, or a Martin Luther King, or a South African level of nonviolence, they are going to win this. And the Israelis will win too, because it is the one thing that the Israelis most desperately need: peace with a Palestinian state.
Yes, well, you know, you have written about different conflicts that you were involved with, especially in Northern Ireland, where you said that during your 9 years, what was important was the ingrained disposition of readiness to respect the dignity of the other that ultimately guided the parties past their apprehensions and enmity to the goal of accommodation. And you also mentioned a very important point, which is that one side continues to look for victory over the other side. Given the colossal superiority of Israeli forces, one sees Israeli governments again and again continue looking for victory over Palestinians.
Well, you know, they can be looking for victory over Palestinians, but what they are losing in the meantime is Israel.
It is the soul of Israel that they're losing in terms of power and influence with American support. They have not lost that power or influence in the world, at least not yet. And that is why there have been cries for a more muscular a more muscular approach to Israel, which is boycott, divestment, and sanctions. Would you have any words on that?
I've never been in favor of the boycotts. I've always felt that these are only going to be taken as the reason for further repression. What I look for, this was the subject of the book that I published a couple of years ago, my Negotiating Outside the Law, Why Camp David Failed. The whole process has taken place without serious regard for international law. If this were governed by international law, the solution is right at hand. Everybody knows what has to happen there, that there has to be a West Bank Gaza state on lines that are very close to the truce lines of 1949, that there has to be a shared Jerusalem that is capital of both, and that the refugee problem of Palestinians has got to be resolved in a way that is both fair to Palestinians and does not destroy the demography of the state of Israel. That's so clear. Everybody knows that. If you don't do this in accordance with law, and the law does provide the way of dealing with all of those questions, including the refugee question, then the only alternative is to try to do it by force. And that is what was done. The Camp David process was a process of coercion. There was an effort to force the Palestinians to succumb simply to the political weight of an Israeli position that had full support of the United States. It was a breakthrough at many levels that the Israelis had never been prepared to discuss before, but it wasn't adequate. And just by the fact that it was an act of coercion, it was automatically an unacceptable thing. If Arafat had signed in 2000, or if Abbas were to sign now, or if any Palestinian were to sign what is effectively an act of coercion, it couldn't have acceptance by the Palestinian people. And that would mean, for the Israelis, very unfortunate conclusion, no peace, than which there is nothing they need more.
I was given a signal that we are running out
of time. I think
we're
over time, aren't we?
Yes. So I thank you so much for
I'm very grateful
today.
Good.
I hope that we can continue this discussion at some other time. Thank you so much.
Fine. Thank you.
You have been listening to Father Raymond Helmick, professor of theology at Boston College. Father Helmick has made peacemaking his life's mission. From Jamaica to Ireland to East Timor to Kosovo to Israel and Palestine to Russia and Africa to Lebanon to the Kurds of Iraq and Turkey, his work of reconciliation has brought respect for the dignity of the other and made possible deep meetings of hearts and minds. And that is all we have for today. We wish our listeners a pleasant and restful weekend and look forward to having you with us next week, same time. Until then, this is Sharif Fahm signing off for now and reminding our listeners to get involved in the good fight for peace in the Middle East. Palestine was never in greater need of your help. Thank you.